What's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode. Today, we're talking about pain. What is it, and where does it come from? Welcome back, y'all. I'm excited to have you here. Today, like I said at the top, we're talking about pain, and I'm excited to talk about it because it's going to be the first episode in a series of episodes regarding pain, where pain comes from, what it is, the mechanisms for pain, because there's different ways that you can feel pain, and how we can help treat it, resolve it, deal with it, all of the above. So hopefully you enjoy this episode. This is going to be a little bit of an introduction of what pain is and where it comes from, and then we'll dive into each of the little subtopics of pain and how to treat each one, how to recognize it, and identify how it plays a part in your life. So the first thing I want you to understand about pain is a simple sentence. Pain is an output. Now, that probably doesn't make any kind of sense to you, and that's what we're going to discuss today. But pain is an output. Essentially, pain is a response. Pain is a efferent nervous system response. Now that, I know, makes no sense to most of you. But again, we'll talk about it right now. Let's dive in to why pain is an output. First, I'll just discuss what the nervous system is like and where the pain comes from. So we have a bunch of different nerves in our body that respond to different things. There's nerves for touch. There's nerves for vibration. There's nerves for cold. There's nerves for hot. All these different nerves to help us sense things in our body. So when we have a sensation, let's say we have a hot stove that we're about to touch, we touch the hot stove and a nerve that reads hot signals, sends a signal to your spine that travels up to your spine, into your brain, and then that is when your brain says, ow. We'll discuss a little bit of the discrepancies of that pathway, because there's also a reflex that doesn't travel to the brain at all. It just goes right to the spinal cord and says, yo, take your hand away before it burns itself. But for our basic purposes, this is what happens in your body. There's a nerve that goes from your exterior, your hands, feet, legs, body, back, and it travels from that area to your spine, up your spinal cord, to your brain. And from there, your brain needs to make a decision. It needs to say, is this nervous signal, is this sensation of touch or hot or cold, is this dangerous? Is it something that I need to protect against? Is it something that I need to respond to or make a behavior happen in order to stop it from happening? If those are true, if it needs to protect, if it needs to avoid damage, etc., your brain will likely say, ow, in response to that nervous system input. So that is why the pain is an output. Your nervous system from your hands, feet, body, and back give an input into your spinal cord, into your brain, and then your brain gives out the output of pain or no pain. Now, your brain also can give other outputs like, oh, that feels good, that's pleasurable, that is a tickle, that is a cold sensation, nothing damaging about it. It's just, oh yeah, that's cold, and it tells you it's cold, and so you can do something about it if you want to. Now, those are all outputs. Pain is among all of those outputs because it is a response to your brain's interpretation of the nervous signal that enters your brain from your body. Mostly, that pain signal, that pain output from the brain, is activated by the specific nerves that detect physical damage. Those specific nerves like hot, those specific nerves like C fibers, they're called, that detect damage to tissues. So mostly, those C fibers detect the damage of chemical damage from like inflammatory damage or cell breakdown or internal dysfunction and inflammation, or physical damage like a cut on your arm, a bruise on your leg, any sort of sprain, strain, broken bone, laceration, etc. Those are all carried by these thing called C fibers, which are more generally termed the pain fibers. They bring usually pain signals to the spinal cord, and it goes up to the brain, and that's when the brain has to decide, should I say pain or should I say no pain? The pain doesn't happen. You don't feel the pain until the brain makes a decision. That's the key that I want you to remember. The brain is deciding amongst all the factors in your life whether to cause pain or to pull back on the reins and say, oh, we can handle this. This is okay. It's not worth it enough to make a big noise about what's going on right now. Now, I think you would know by now that this is not a conscious decision. All this is going on in your subconscious. It's behind the scenes. You're not actively saying, I cut my arm. Should I be angry about this? Should I be screaming in pain about this? No, you're not deciding that. Your brain is doing it for you in the background, because it would take way too long for you to decide if something should be painful when you're bleeding out or something like that. That's not a proper evolutionary response. You'd probably die pretty quickly if it took you a minute and a half to determine if a huge laceration was worth you being in pain or not. The obvious thing about pain that I think we all recognize is that it's meant to be an alarm system. It's meant to provoke some action or some type of avoidance of an action in order to avoid damage, avoid dysfunction, avoid some sort of negative effect. So usually the pain response is a protective response, especially when it's telling you to avoid an action or to take your finger away from the flame. Now, that's a good point to talk about too, is that even before the burning happens to your finger, if you start putting your finger towards a flame, even before burning actually happens, you can put your finger really close to a flame and pull it away because you're in pain, because it's painful. But then if you pull your finger away, you can look at your finger, feel it, and there's no burn, there's no real redness, or it kind of goes away after a little while. All your sensations are still there. It's a perfectly normal, healthy finger. So why did your brain tell you, ow? Why did it say that hurts? Well, because it's avoiding a potentially damaging situation. It's preemptively telling you that it's predicting damage. And so it's saying that's painful so that it gets you to take action. It gets you to move your finger away. That can go for many things, like somebody walking with a limp is maybe anticipating, even if there's no real damage there, maybe it's old damage, like from an old sprained ankle that's already healed, but the brain may still think that could be damaging if I move my ankle a certain way. So it prevents you from walking normally because it's used to this old habit of predicting a painful response. It had went through this week or week and a half of it being painful to dorsiflex your foot while walking because you had a sprained ankle. And so then it remembers that prediction and it continues it. It persists throughout your life, even after the ankle has already healed. So that's a way that your brain predicts damage, but it's kind of a negative response. And we'll talk about that in great, great detail over the next coming episodes. And I want to talk about one other thing about the nervous system too, before we move on. And that is that sometimes your nerves can stop a pain signal at the spinal cord. And what I mean by that is sometimes those C fibers that come from your body, your extremities, can take a signal to the spinal cord, and then your spinal cord has these mechanisms to shut down the pain response. It can just like put a gate up that prevents the nerve signal, the pain signal, from going into the spinal cord and up towards the brain. Now, it also works in the opposite way, where it can come to the spinal cord, that nerve signal for pain goes to the spinal cord, and it can amplify the signal. It can make it more prominent for the brain so that it gives more weight to the pain signal in order to give the brain more reason to be painful, to say ow, right? So it can turn up the response to pain. It can turn up the signal of pain at the spinal cord. It could turn down the signal and make it less amplified, or it can just stop it altogether, so the pain never occurs. It just stops at the spinal cord. There's nothing deciding to be painful or not at the spinal cord. It's just a bunch of nerves that are carrying signals. There's no deciding actually happening. So it can stop at the spinal cord and then all good, no pain at all. Even if there's some actual damage, there could be an opportunity for the spinal cord to say, it's damaged, but we're stopping it because there's something else going on that's preventing the pain signal from going up into the brain. For example, like if I have a paper cut on my finger but a sprained ankle at the same time, maybe the spinal cord will just like not worry about that because it's focusing on other things. It's not really making a decision, but it's just a chemical response in the spinal cord that prioritizes the pain signal coming from a different area and doesn't send the signal from the other area that's not as amplified of a pain signal. Now, if the nerve signal coming from your body does get amplified, or if it ends up getting to the brain, whether it's an amplified signal or a less amplified signal, then your brain still has a chance to interpret it. Your brain will interpret every nervous signal coming up to the brain, because that's its job. Its job is to interpret the nerves and the things that are coming from the rest of your body. That's its main purpose for existence, which is a weird thing to think about, because we think of our brain as mostly a decision maker, but that's actually such a small part of our brain. It's not just about our mental thoughts and our decisions. That's kind of coming from the front of our brain mostly. A lot of your brain is devoted to making decisions about what's happening in the rest of your body. And you would see in this thing called a homunculus, it's a picture of a brain with a allocation of how many nerves are devoted towards different areas of your body. And it looks kind of like a funky human figure traversing across the top of a brain to show which areas of the brain are allocated for different areas of the body. And most of that section of the brain is occupied by your body and not by mental thoughts and decision making and speech and language and that type of thing. So back on track though, if that nervous signal goes up to your brain is going to make a decision no matter what. And you won't have any pain at all until the brain makes a decision. Your brain is making these decisions very, very quickly and all the time, but you're not going to have pain in an area if your brain decides that doesn't deserve my scream, doesn't deserve my alarm system. However, the one caveat to that is your brain can decide about sending an alarm of pain or not with any nervous signal that comes up to the brain. It doesn't just have to be carried by the nerve fibers that carry pain. It can be carried by the nerve fibers that carry cold or carry light touch, etc. So your brain can still decide whether to give a pain signal in response to any of those nerves. And that there is also another thing we'll talk about in the future, is how sometimes just a light touch on your forearm or on your ankle or something like that can cause pain. Usually that's during times of actual injury. Sometimes it's during a persistent bout of pain where it carries on for months at a time, even after the injury has healed. But there's still pain there because your brain is interpreting something small like a light touch as being damaging and painful. It still thinks that there's a problem there. And so it sends bad signals. It sends an alarm system for insults that aren't really insults. They're just light touch. They're little tickles. They're things that should normally not cause you pain, but they do because your brain is thinking that there's a damage going on, thinking that there's still an issue and that it wants you to stop that action. So it sends an alarm for pain. These are kind of the biggest concepts for chronic pain, and those are the areas where I think people can be helped the most. That's the devastating thing about chronic pain, is that it hurts even when it shouldn't. And there's ways to treat that and think about those pains that are very helpful for people that are in those situations. So kind of the point that I've been revolving around regarding pain is that it can be actual It can be real pain from real damage and real threat of damage, or it can kind of be perceived. It can be perceived damage, the perceived threat of injury. Even though there might not be a real threat, it can be perceived threat. And so that's where all the psychological and social elements of pain come into play. There's so many things going on in your life that your brain is taking in and using to make decisions about pain. So whether that be your past life experiences with a certain action, or the emotional state that you're in at a certain time, or the attitudes and beliefs that you have about an action or behavior, or your attitudes and beliefs about pain, or it can be your expectations for the future, expectations about an activity going bad or an activity not resulting in the result that you want. These things all are factored in by your brain and very quickly in order to give a response, give an output of pain or not. And that means even when you are having the same injury, let's say, even if you have the same paper cut between your fingers, the state in which you get that paper cut will change your response about pain, about if it hurts or not. I mean, this is pretty self-explanatory in when described this way. Like, if you get a paper cut when you're on the battlefield at war, will that paper cut hurt? Probably not at all. You won't even know that you got it until later on when you're back at camp or something and you're just sitting there hanging out eating food. Then you might feel that paper cut. Why? Because your brain, it's not only just the adrenaline and the hormones that are rushing through your body, but your brain is making a decision to say, that is absolutely not worth my energy to cause pain, because it would put me in a more damaging scenario to be in pain on the battlefield when I need to be focused on other things like looking out for somebody who's going to attack me. So the stimulus for the pain signal could be the same in all sorts of situations, but the response, the output of the brain based on your life events, your current state, or the factors around you, the environment around you, all those things will significantly change the output of your brain and the response it has to say, ow, that hurts, or to not worry about it at all. Now, I know that that comment will probably cause some questions about if pain is all in your head. And I want to make it very, very clear that that does not mean pain is all in your head. The only reason why pain is in your head is because that's where your brain is. And yes, that's where the pain is coming from. But it does not mean that you're imagining the pain, that pain is your fault, that pain is some sort of emotional, completely psychological response. That is not what it is at all. Pain is very real, no matter what. No matter if there's damage or not, your pain is absolutely real. The same kind of argument could be made for a mom lifting a car off of a baby. Clearly, that mom doesn't have imagined strength. It's not like she's imagining her strength. If she were imagining it, there's no way she would actually be able to do that. She has the strength. She has the ability to do that. And it's more than just adrenaline that enables her to lift that car. She has to have the muscle integrity to be able to do that. But it's not saying that her strength was imagined. Her strength was very real. That's why she was able to have a real result. The same thing goes for your pain. It's not like it's an imagined response. It's very real. Just because it's coming from your brain does not mean it's all in your head. Only reason why it's all in your head is because it's literally located there in your body, right? So pain is very real. That's what I need you to remember. Because a lot of times people think that when we talk about the sources of pain that we're blaming somebody for having pain, or saying that their pain is not real, or we're making them feel that way. And that's absolutely not how I view pain at all. And I hope that that comes across. So the final few points on pain for now, we're going to talk a lot about this in the next coming episodes, but for this episode, we'll keep it a little bit shorter so that we don't overwhelm you with a bunch of information. So the comment I want to make about this is that it's not just pain that your brain decides upon. Your brain can also make a decision. It can also send an output of an action, like protecting your body with a muscle tightness protecting your body with an increased stress response to get you to relax, or an increase in chemical release in your body so that it gets your area of your body or a body part to feel like warm or hot or kind of like dull, achy type of thing. Yes, that's like a bit of a pain response, but it's also an internal chemical response. So that's all to say that your brain is not just making decisions about pain. It's also making decisions about where to decide where to put muscle tightness, where to decide to increase stress in order to get a response. Essentially, your brain is just doing whatever it can to get a response from you in order to protect an area, more or less. That's what we'll stick with for now, is that your brain is trying to protect you in most circumstances. And in order to protect you, it'll do what it needs to force an action, to force you not to move your neck a certain way by restricting the muscle, by making it tighter on one side so that you can't get to that range of motion. That's a way to protect your muscles and your joints, because your muscles hold on to your joints, and by making them tighter, it prevents motion in those joints. And if your brain wants to avoid damage by over rotating or overturning your neck, for example, then it might make your trap muscles and your scalene muscles tighter so that it prevents that motion, and it forces you to be protected. It forces you to rest in that area until it heals. And the final point about pain is going to be kind of a controversial one, and that is that pain is pretty unreliable. Where we have pain and why we have pain is sometimes a fool's errand. It's sometimes a red herring as to where the actual problem is. And that's such a common thing in my practice. As a chiropractor, you see things where people have pain on one side, but their muscle tightness is on completely the other side of their body, or in a complete different area that is the true source or cause of where their pain is coming from. So the pain is just like some weird response to your brain just to get some sort of action, some sort of alarm system into you so that you make a decision or change your behavior somehow. But sometimes it's not even in the right spot, and that sucks. I wish our brain was more obvious with where it puts its pain so that I would have an easier job and you would have a probably easier time figuring out what was wrong, and you wouldn't be living with pain for longer than you need to. So the other unreliable thing about pain is that it doesn't always mean damage. Just like we talked about before, when we put our finger to the flame, it's not damaged, but we still get the sensation of pain and we pull our finger away. Why? Because your brain is either perceiving the threat of damage, or it's giving you a response to things that are usually non-damaging because of the factors that are going on in your environment, because of the emotional thoughts, beliefs, attitudes, expectations, past experiences, all those things that come into play throughout your life, added stressors and whatnot that help increase the signal of pain, increase the output of pain, or the probability that your brain will say that something's painful, even when it's not damaging. So pain does not always equal damage. And that's especially true in more of the longer term cases of pain, some of those chronic pain scenarios. Most of the time, those tissues that are painful have already healed. There's no damage anymore. There's no increase in damage when you move a certain way, even though it's painful. And that's the hard thing. That's the hard thing to get across to my patients. Probably one of the hardest is that you're not increasing damage just because it's painful to move that way. And for good reason. I can totally understand that. We've lived in a world where that's usually means something. Pain means something. When we sprain our ankle, yep, that's damaging, and yep, it hurts. And so we've been Pavlov dogged to think pain equals damage, but that's not the case. And it's a hard thing to get across, but it takes time and trust to promote that idea that pain does not equal damage, that pain is unreliable. Mostly in those chronic persistent pain scenarios, that's when it usually becomes counterproductive, is when a tissue's already healed, but your brain is in this habitual pattern. It has this memory about your response and your painful actions in the past. And so it holds on to that memory and continues to create that painful response even after the tissues have healed. That's when pain is usually most counterproductive and most unreliable, is in those long-term chronic pain scenarios. In acute scenarios, like the sprained ankle situation, that is an easy way to determine pain. It's pretty cut and dry. A equals B. I damaged something, it's painful for the immediate term and a little bit afterwards. It gets better, and then no more pain. That's the hopeful scenario for most injuries. So we'll talk about that scenario specifically in the future, as well as these scenarios of chronic pain and why pain might persist for longer even after an area has been healed. That's what we'll talk about in the upcoming episodes. Those are the mechanisms for pain, whether it's acute pain, that's usually an inflammation or ischemia type of response to pain. It could be a nerve problem with the pain signal. The nerve can be damaged and that causes pain, or it can be a mechanical dysfunction where some joints aren't moving well, muscles aren't moving well, they aren't gliding, they aren't doing their job correctly, and so that causes pain in that way. And then on the other side, there's some chronic situations, chronic mechanisms for pain that make pain persist for longer than it should. And we'll talk about all those in great detail in the future. So look forward to that, and thank you so much for joining me today, listening, learning, and loving up on your body, and learning about why pain matters and what you can do about it. So I hope you enjoyed the intro, and we'll talk about more later. See you then.
Thanks for listening to Health in the Whole. If you liked it, please subscribe so you can hear more episodes.
And remember, this podcast is not medical advice. Consult your health provider before doing anything drastic.